Johnny Bravo hits on Cartoon Network, a robotic cop shoots Detroit in the dick, and Adam Sandler is hilariously gay. This week on 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010, three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010, 30-2010, the presses are awaiting if we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Hola, everybody. Welcome to another fun-filled window into the past 30, 20, and 10 years ago. This is 30, 20, 10. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Antista.
I'm Dave. I'm going to sell you cigarettes, Rudden.
Dick Jones employee, Henry Gilbert.
Good morning, Baltimore. I'm Diana Goodman.
Yes, this is going to be such an exciting episode. There's so many great TV shows, a great game, and for my money, I think we might talk about the best movie of all time.
One of my top three ever, I'd say.
Yeah. It's a damn good movie. It's really good. Try and guess what it is, because we're going to get to it in like 4 seconds.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. This is Bob Mackey.
Chris Antista.
Henry Gilbert.
And when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons only on the Laser Time Podcast Network.
Where we occasionally talk sports.
Daryl.
When we throw people under the bus, name names like the insidious
Mr. Black.
And we're the one podcast that will never sell out to foreign interests.
Ooh, the Germans are mad at me. I'm so scared. Ooh, the Germans.
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
If you don't know what we are 30-20-10. We look at every week, each week. Is that awkward? 30, 20, and 10 years ago into the past. What was happening July 14th through the 20th on in 1987, 1997, and 2007? In the news, movies, television, music, and games. Not a lot of news this week. July 14th, McMartin preschool trial officially opens.
That
sounds scary.
I picked this as a good time to summarize this whole case.
I saw the HBO movie with James Woods, and
It is great. So this is the height of 80s satanic panic, that there are satanic cults that are abusing children sexually. They're killing people. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And this, these folks that ran a preschool, you could do a version of The Crucible, I think, about this. It's
definite witch hunt.
So it's a total witch hunt. Yeah, it started with a mentally ill alcoholic mom who decided that, like, oh, I think my kid's being touched. And so all these other kids were, you know, talked to with very coercive techniques where it's like, did he touch you there? Well, did he touch you there? And eventually, you know, you talk to a kid long enough, and they're like,
did he touch you there? Where? Here, where he touched you. Oh,
if
okay, yeah.
If keeps asking you, yeah, it was...
just say yes to everything.
And it was just...
And I saw Snagglepuss go to the bathroom.
Exactly.
The coerced confessions
that
from children that... they were ultimately exonerated.
Yeah, well, I mean, the things that the kids were saying, there's tunnels under the place, they flew us out to Reno, I saw them kill a kid.
They're molesting people in the pizza shop.
Yeah, this lady flew. I saw a lady who could fly because of witchcraft. So, in 87, after 2 years of preliminary hearings, the trial opens with two defendants, 109 counts combined.
Jesus.
It ends in one acquittal and one deadlock in 1990, so 3 years
Holy
of trial.
Shit. Nice. So these people are beyond ruined.
Oh, yeah. Then the second trial of the one defendant is deadlocked and he is freed. The prosecution's cost $15 million and ran for 7 years, the longest and most expensive criminal trial in U.S. history.
Wow. Holy shit.
For nothing.
For nothing.
I mean, like...
I'm guessing on Amazon, if you have Amazon Prime and they still have their straight to HBO movies, I know I've seen a couple there.
Yeah. There's
the McMartin trials is the James Wood movie all about this.
You know, the... Capturing the Freedmans kind of goes into this too, though. Yeah. That was a much more
that's a, that, that has is a, that
a much
a triple
harder
turn
thing to tell, yeah. But But they have a big point in there of just like that in the 80s, this was a huge hysteria of like that there were cabals of people who were going to molest your children instead of like probably a member of your family who was doing it, not some cabal of Satanists.
Oddly enough, right around the start of 24/7 cable news. Weird how people get panicked.
So people, it was this large panic. And actually, there was a really good episode of the BBC news series called Brass Eye, all about
Pedo-geddon.
About Pedo-geddon and just
it's great
hysteria over it, which is not to say yes, you should absolutely investigate those situations and find out, but there is a way to deal with it without jitting up hysteria over it.
Yep.
Yes. Well, in lighter news, let's move into the movies because there are a whole bunch. An Autumn's Tale with Chow Yun-fat.
Oh yeah, we got a 1-2 punch of great Hong Kong dramas. Mm-hmm. Not so much with the fighting, but An Autumn's Tale is kind of a romance. I believe I want to say it's set in New York. Chow Yun-fat and this girl, and this girl follows her boyfriend in New York, and he's with another girl, and then there's romance.
And then a Chinese ghost story.
Chinese ghost story, which is just what it says is. Leslie,
that's great.
Leslie Cheung, R.I.P.
Is that a Ryan Murphy show?
Leslie Cheung is the greatest. Yeah. I love her so much.
Are you thinking Maggie Cheung?
Yes, Maggie Cheung, yes. Sorry. Yeah, my bad. She was the greatest, too.
Yeah. Chinese ghost story is also kind of romantic. It's the guy goes to basically a haunted house and falls in love with a ghost.
Oh.
It's really good. It was remade a couple years ago as like a wuxia fighting movie, and that looks kind
of
cool too.
Instead
honestly.
Of sculpting clay, they do some origami. That's racist. Yeah. I'm going to move on. But
they're both supposed to be so good.
Speaking of Asians, I was shocked to see this Dragon Ball Sleeping Princess and the Devil's Castle. The second Dragon Ball movie.
Yes. Jeez.
People listening, there have been Dragon Ball movies since before you were
they're
born.
They're all in the top 250 on IMDb for some reason.
Yeah. Well, the Dragon Ball, the regular series, was already getting huge in Japan. They are years away from the Dragon Ball Z thing
like
when it becomes what's big here. The Dragon Ball original series never gets too big in America because it is more a goofball comedy than a fighting show.
A lot of nudity.
Yeah.
Of Goku. He's 14, but looks like 10, and it's just like, isn't it funny? He's walking around with his dick out, and nobody.
I just saw a clip on Facebook that he's just smacking people's to see if they're a guy or a girl. He just smacks people in the crotch.
We're gonna see American kid nudity animated in 2007. So who are we to talk?
it's an okay Dragon Ball film.
Yeah. We also have Nowhere to Hide with Amy Madigan and Michael Ironside.
This has a great over-the-top 87 trailer.
Have to deal with
Amy Madigan, wife, mother,
Johnny!
Ex-Marine. In the middle of a conspiracy that exploded her world, they left her no choice. She's giving them nowhere to hide.
Man. That looks wonderful.
Yeah. I want to watch that.
She's
right
not
now.
Taking any more of Uncle Buck's shit.
No.
So is Michael Ironside the villain in it?
I believe he is.
Of course he is.
Man, I gotta watch this.
But an even better camp. The fourth and final Jaws movie, Jaws: The Revenge. Oh, yes, you pronounced the colon.
I had to put this end of the trailer in here because it's got the tagline.
Oh, wonderful.
Man's deepest fear has risen again. Jaws, the revenge. This time, it's personal.
That
yes,
God, that is so wonderful. Because if you don't know, this Jaws sequel, it's the son of Jaws.
It's how it's related to Jaws.
It
I don't
is a
know.
Descendant of Bruce.
The shark is a descendant and is specifically out for revenge.
And doesn't it follow them all the way to the Caribbean or something?
It stalks specific people to take revenge.
And Mario Van Peebles is in it as well as a Jamaican
who gets killed hilariously, and then just at the end of the movie, I'm okay, man. He pops out of the water, and we just move on. Michael Caine is in it.
So first of all, this shark knows the Brody family, knows that they have fought previously, sets a trap for one of them, and eats them, and then the mom is like, fuck this, I'm getting on this fucking island, leaves, goes to the Caribbean, and the shark somehow knows she left, knows where she went, and can get there in about a day. So the shark is swimming at about 800 miles an hour to get down there into warm water, which it doesn't like.
And the shark also roars.
It roars. It goes after her and her descendants personally.
Yes. Because this time it's personal.
They can only bring back the wife from Jaws.
I believe she was married to an executive also.
Ah,
that doesn't hurt. Yeah, but I mean, Roy Scheider's not coming back. He died off screen, apparently. No one else is coming back for this garbage.
And so they got Mike Cocaine.
Mike Cocaine, who could not pick up his Oscar for Hannah and Her Sisters because he was filming this.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I'm doing a shark movie.
Yeah,
I'm doing a shark movie right now. He's chasing us across the Caribbean.
Well, this would ruin his reputation forever of just like, Michael Caine does everything.
No, it was ruined earlier. I mean, he was bouncing back with Hannah and Her Sisters, but he said repeatedly, I've never seen the movie. I saw the house it paid for.
Yes.
Yeah, it's garbage.
Great way to
put
it.
And that's just, I
it
think,
so bad.
The third Jaws movie is set in a SeaWorld setting, and I think the one note they got from executives like, this isn't stupid enough. Make a movie about the shark is like a fucking detective.
It's been 30 years since the last new Jaws movie.
Yeah.
Man, they're never going to...
And what I like about it is...
How are we going to get to Jaws 19 from Back to the Future Part 2?
Well, there's other shark movies, sadly. Yeah. But I love that there is... It's one of those only movies. There's no talk of sequels and no talk of remakes. No one wants to do that. It's one of the few properties they'll leave alone.
God willing.
Nice. God willing. And that is not even the best movie of the week. It turns out the best movie of all time is also this week.
We get the best of both worlds. The fastest reflexes modern technology has to offer, onboard computer-assisted memory, and a lifetime of on-the-street law enforcement programming. It is my great pleasure to present to you... RoboCop.
Does anyone recognize that music, by the way?
That is the Terminator music.
Yeah, it is.
In the original trailer, they didn't have their music ready yet, so they had the Terminator.
But at the time, both under the still-existing, I think now exists again, Orion brand, because Terminator and RoboCop would team up in comics and video games at some point.
Yes, the... this is my favorite movie ever, probably. I love
the simple story
so
of not too distant future where a prototype mechanized cop, Peter Murphy. No, it's Peter Weller playing
Peter Weller
playing Murphy, who gets killed in the line of duty and he gets like Bionic Man style cybernetic enhancements on his body, but he's presumed dead. He's just this living corpse inside of a robotic cop body, and the movie is. I hate this cliched headline. The movie is everything.
It is everything. In a way, it is a Western. Mm-hmm. Like, there have been a million Westerns of the evil bad gang of kills a cop or thinks they did, and then the sheriff comes back, and it's about his revenge. It's also about the privatization of government programs.
Yeah.
It's also about the expansion of the corporations in general throughout America. It's also a crazy drug-fueled action film with blood everywhere.
It is a perfect... B action movie with some of the most biting under the surface satire.
Oh man!
Like ever, it is so great.
Well, I mean, when you
watch satire, it's amazing that I watched this. I don't know, as a teenager, and it felt like a big stupid action movie to me at the time. And then I watched this maybe a year ago.
So good.
And I realized this satire needed to sit for 30 years because it is like the perfect satire of the 80s now.
Yep.
It's got all of the 80s fears all wrapped up.
It had everything.
The lawlessness, the corporatization of stuff, the profit motive, the massive machinery blowing shit up, the loss of personal identity. Oh, my God. The drugs, the Miguel Ferrer suits, everything.
Yeah. Well, the Paul Verhoeven and Niedermeyer, like, they were too smart for people, even for the executives. They snuck that shit in
They did, because, like, the origin of this... It's like the screenwriter walking by the poster for Blade Runner. Like, what's that movie about? Cop who hunts robots. Robot cop. I'm writing this. And they gave everybody... No one wanted to make this dumb movie. And Verhoeven somehow got talked into it and made this oddly subversive, very poignant thing that went over a ton of people's heads.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's such a perfect branding name, but that's of RoboCop. Mm-hmm. It sounds stupid, but it's that because it was named by a stupid executive selling it to people in the movie. It's perfect, and that it is about the destruction of your humanity, too.
Yeah.
Like, they literally, they create a danger zone to kill cops to then harvest their bodies to make them RoboCop.
Yeah.
But they keep dying the wrong way. And the cops are just like, cops can't go on strike. And the cops are like, but we're being fucked. Like, we have no money, no body armor. We're getting murdered.
And if you haven't seen this, but you might have seen Starship Troopers, and there's a lot of DNA in that. Obviously, Paul Verhoeven.
And
World
and
War
Needham,
II survivor.
Same writer, too.
A World War II survivor. So everything he makes is kind of a critical look at fascism and propaganda.
He is a Jew who survived World War II, and then he is a... He is a hard, like he is a hard lefty, but yeah. makes films that
are hyper violent.
That's yeah. what I love about him too. That you can just be like, this guy hates corporations, hates right wing dudes, but he will give you blood and explosion.
That mutant hitting the windshield.
He pours toxic waste over a human being so he can splatter like a water balloon when he's hit by a car. It was originally, I think, it got an X rating solely due to unflinching. Violent shots, and that's since been restored in a lot of the DVD releases. Mm-hmm. It contains the best performance ever from Kurtwood Smith of That 70s Show, including the greatest line of all time.
Bitches leave.
It's also what he says when he wants Topher Grace to leave the room during That 70s Show.
No, I'm so sad Miguel Ferrer is no longer with us.
That
too.
Sucks,
He is so great in this. Just the right level of just unctuous corporate... dickwad that's just gonna, you know, only
but you're
cares
rooting
about
for him over Dick Jones because Dick Jones is worse, and that their boss also is just like, well, he's the old man, and they try to cast him as the old man, but he's like, no, he's out to murder every poor person in Detroit so he can rebuild it as his news as it's, Delta City.
It bizarrely predicted a lot of privatization of law enforcement and incarceration, the slow decay of an industrial city like Detroit. But again, the movie is pulpy, hyper violent Western. But also really smart and funny. It's funny
you can
all the
enjoy
way through.
It on lots of levels.
Buy that for a dollar.
Give me my fucking phone call. Yes.
You have 10 seconds to comply. All right, he put it down. You have 5 seconds to comply.
He shoots somebody in the dick, and there's a video online that recreated the scene where he does nothing but shoot dicks. Yeah. It's hilarious.
When Ed 209 kills that guy in the boardroom,
amazing.
Just the way Dick Jones goes like. There's some problems. Like
some bugs
to work out. A man was just exploded in a bloody mess in this meeting, and just like, I'm very disappointed in you.
He looks like he's glitching out in a video game engine because he's being riddled for like a solid minute in a boardroom.
And then everybody was like, call 911. It's like, he's dead. He's pulp.
The movie has everything. It has a great suit, a great character. It has so much great stop motion for no reason, including in the fucking awesome commercials.
The fake commercials and the fake TV is so great. Like,
buy that for a dollar.
The gas guzzling dinosaur of a thing, the Nukem game,
the full bodied 5,000 proof sunblock that you need to wear in a future where the sun is killing us.
I also rewatched it last year, and one thing that really struck me was just how like the world is going to shit everywhere outside of Detroit too, but they just kind of do a one off line. They're like, terrorists blew up this place. Guess I can't go there on vacation. Anyway, it's like the world is dying around them and they don't care.
It's
like,
a great companion piece for Starship Troopers.
It is now. Like, it feels like now. I read this amazing article about Paul Verhoeven showing the film at some college in America the week after the election. And everybody's like, this predicted everything. It's like, he's basically goes, I didn't want it to.
Yeah. I didn't want it. It's just bizarre that he has this worldview that was so ahead of its time. And I just love this. This movie flew under the radar. It's just a stupid movie kids like. And it also has the tragedy of like, this is the only good RoboCop thing,
so,
period.
I will say, I watched every RoboCop thing ever except the remake. And
I watched the remake. It's almost good. It's,
but 2 and 3, they become more action figurey. It's not Paul Verhoeven or Niemeyer.
The only comparison I can think of is the original Godzilla and everything that came afterwards. Like,
I will say the RoboCop TV show is all right because they have more time and they delve much more into the politics of things, which RoboCop 3 was just like, no, it needs to be PG-13 and have a hang gliding RoboCop and sell it to him.
He's got to fly. Yeah, well, it became a rated R kids sensation. I don't understand it. And it look it up cartoon. Online. A great pitchman for Japanese fried chicken. Yes. Like, they have a couple RoboCop commercials.
My hope is that Terminator Genisys and the RoboCop remake both did so poorly that I think their only chance for survival is to finally do that RoboCop versus Terminator movie.
I just don't...
Peter Weller's never going to wear that shit.
Why? They're two robots, and the Terminator's way more powerful.
Yeah. They hired Peter Weller because he was so skinny that they could put all that shit on him.
Yeah. And it's like,
I have to say, he's doing some amazing physical work.
He is.
There.
Yes.
I mean,
if you think he's like, wow,
he's
that
doing the robot.
And he's moving like
special
that.
Effects on that robot suit. Like, he is walking. Like a robot.
He's walking like a robot because the suit, we hear this about all the time, like Batman films, but like at this point there weren't a lot of superhero outfits. He couldn't move.
Yeah.
He stated he lost 3 pounds a day due to sweat.
Wow. I think it, I remember. Wasn't there like one scene where he's supposed to like catch a gun or something, and it took him like fucking like 30 takes because
he can barely see, he can barely move. Yeah.
No, the keys. He's like, I got the keys.
There's some behind the scenes shot somewhere that like he couldn't even like. It's awesome. The iconic shot of him stepping out of the car is always a close up on his foot because he can't fit in a car with a suit on. So he's driving around in his underwear. So there's behind the scenes footage of that. He's in his underwear with the upper RoboCop thing, and that's why.
So it's like your dad come home from work.
Yeah.
Sitting on the couch, like, and I'm RoboCop,
I love that movie. Watch the...
It's so good.
For the longest time, the only way you could see the X-rated version was on the Criterion edition, but now that's... that. Basically, all the Criterion extras have been on every re-release of RoboCop. If you just get, like, the $10 Blu-ray now, you'll get it, and those extras are all
Great. It's one of the best movies of all time. I can't... I've said that about a ton of movies, but undeniably, gun to my head... What is the best movie? It's RoboCop. I can't help it. It just is. It's so good. And it's never not interesting or fascinating. Mm-hmm. I watch this movie once a year. I love RoboCop. And I discovered it way late. This is not my nostalgia going for me. The first time I saw it was a made-for-TV edit that my friend showed me because I wasn't allowed to see it. I'm like, who cares?
I probably watched the cartoon first, and then my mom rented it, the movie, not realizing it was the bloodiest thing I'd ever seen. And maybe it scarred me, but then as I watched it, like when I was 16 or so, that's when it finally clicked. Like, oh, that's what this movie is.
Because I think I saw
it was after Starship Troopers.
I saw
when
two
I really
uncut first, which like this would have been a great Ninja Turtles movie, but this is a terrible follow up to RoboCop. That's it, RoboCop. I can talk all day about it. We got to get into television.
Did we do commentary for RoboCop?
We did.
It's on the Patreon and on
our Patreon.com. Patreon.com/LaserTime and LaserTime.Bandcamp, where we do occasionally do full-length commentaries to some of the movies that we talk about. Mm-hmm. But we got to get out of movies right now and move into television of 1987.
It's pretty weak, don't
July
worry.
14th through the 20th.
Thank you, Fox, for having something at least.
They wanted to be the kings of summer.
Well, yeah. Also, they had just launched in April, so it's like they can't. They got to put everything out that they can as fast as possible. Oh, go ahead.
Well, first off, on July 14th, there was the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and for once, the National League won it, man.
Yeah,
American League always wins. So, yeah, 2-0 in National League.
This is also, you could tell it's the 80s All-Star Game because it's so low scoring. Nowadays, it's like every pitcher is out for an inning at most, and they're facing the toughest hitters in the league, so it's always like 11-8 or whatever. But this is, like, back then, yeah, you could actually have a shutout. And
Since it's not like a real game, they don't try as hard because they don't want to hurt themselves or overexert
themselves. Yeah, but I think in the 80s, people were just going harder anyway. Mm-hmm. And there is nowadays, you're technically playing the winning league gets the World Series advantage. Like, they get the 4 games and the loser gets 3 games of the World Series.
There are 7 games in the All-Stars?
Not in the All-Stars. Mm-hmm. It means it's the order it goes in. Oh. You do 2-4.
Holy
shit. It goes to 7 games. In the World Series.
I'm learning this for the first time. Baseball
they made that because in the early 2000s, I think. I can't remember exactly when it was, but there was the 1 year that the All-Star Game went to a tie and they just stopped playing because it was like, we used all our players. People don't want to injure themselves to play any more of this game. And after that, MLB was like, we have to make this mean something so people will watch it. And okay, so winner gets the advantage in the World Series, the home field advantage. So
this, the 1987 All-Star Game is something people might remember.
No, probably not.
The Fox shows... that
also won't be remembered.
Debuted in the summer. We're not remembered. And this is a theme song to a what?
Karen's Song, which was a Fox sitcom starring Patty Duke as a 40-year-old woman dating a 28-year-old man.
Oh, that's sexy.
Scandalous. But yeah, Patty Duke,
It was a big deal to be like, Patty Duke comes back to TV on Fox.
On Fox.
A very un-Fox-like show. It seems very modest.
It's a very sexy theme song.
Also has one of the first roles for Terry Hatcher.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. The future Lois Lane.
Yeah.
I think
10 years later, she'd be the most downloaded woman on the internet, thanks to Lois and Clark.
That's right. But yeah,
Lewis Smith is her 28-year-old
boyfriend. I mean, Patty Duke. That airing next to Married with Children? Yeah. What the hell?
I guess his hot dog makes her lose control.
I got it.
Also, the same night, the New Adventures of Beans Baxter. What's that? What the hell?
It's
is
a show by Savage Steve Holland. Oh. It's what he did before Eek the Cat and after One Crazy Summer. It was the beginning of his relationship with Fox Television. It is a it has a perfect intro that explains the entire plot.
Yay.
Beans Baxter may look like your typical teenager, but this kid has one of the most dangerous after-school jobs going. I should know. I'm Baxter's boss. The government calls me number two. You see, Beans Baxter is a spy. Not even his mother or little brother knows he's working on the side. If they did, it could endanger their lives. His father was one of the network's top couriers until the notorious terrorist organization UGLI, headed by the...
Ugly.
Yeah. Oh, is that Kurtwood Smith?
Yeah.
In the movie. In the same
Beans
show.
Leave.
Beans
At the
leave.
Same time as RoboCop is in theaters, he's on...
What a year.
Bitches leave.
I can't get enough of that sound.
So, when I see Beans Baxter, I can see him... I can see Steve Holland... taking some of the cartoonish DNA he had in One Crazy
yeah.
Summer and trying to make it into an all-ages live-action show. But it really wouldn't work. He just needed to go straight to cartoons.
You saying that, he was the closest thing like Fox had to a synonymous animated brand because he had, at one point, three shows on the Saturday morning and just created a big block of the terrible Thunder Lizards...
Yeah,
Eat the Cats.
Eat the Cat, Terrible Thunder Lizard.
And there was one more, and I forget what it was, but he did all of them.
But I, man, that show, if that show came out 3 years later, I would have totally been into it, because it seems very much in the same vein as, like, Erie, Indiana, like,
well,
oh, a primetime show made for me.
Well, but Fox didn't have kids programming then either.
Yeah.
They didn't. It would be 5 years before Fox's Saturday morning stuff began.
It wasn't worth it, but if we want to move into kid shit, 1987 in games.
Yeah, a bunch of July NES releases. They're all just listed as July, but...
Oh, there it is.
So I broke up between this and next week, and this is probably the biggest July 1987 game release, Kid Icarus. Which for years was kind of like a dormant franchise for Nintendo. They brought
it
back in 2011.
Again.
Yeah, it is again. Kid Icarus is all right. It's not in the same league
one
as
of the worst.
Mario and
it's
Zelda, but it's fun.
Well, it's like if the Metroid team tried to make a Mario-ish game or a cuter game, but it's just not as good.
It's kind of like a first draft of Metroid. Like, it has that vertical climbing, stores, and
weird
enemies.
Well, it's actually a year after Metroid.
Oh, really?
Though,
shit.
It's easier in that.
Yeah.
But it's also worse and weird. It has credit cards and tempura things.
And you turn into an eggplant and walk backwards.
Yeah. You don't fly till the very end.
Say, if you fly too high, you just die.
Yeah, if you fly at all.
Do you?
If you fly at all, return your game.
No, I think you go up, and the screen is scrolling with you.
Yeah.
But then if you fall down to where you were climbing up before, you die, which doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't work. In 2013, they finally put out the third Icarus game that turned it into a fun on-rail shooter, but still kept all the weird-ass shit from the NES one. But I hate when I rented this as a kid, I was like,
I'm not buying this. Metroid was already too hard, and this just sucks.
But if you're going to play it, there's a 3D Classics version on
that's
the 3DS.
That's the way to play the original, if you're gonna.
Because I think it also has, like... save states, so you can fuck up a little bit more and it won't be as bad.
It does have one of those like 20 character password systems, doesn't it?
I think so. Yeah,
battery memory.
You don't have to worry about that on the 3DS.
But I think that to its credit, that's because it'll like it's specific to what you're carrying in your inventory. That and Mighty Bomb Jack, which is a game when there wasn't a lot of games, I'd look at that and like I don't think so, and I don't know why.
For me, this is notable because I think for like. From 1987 to about 1995, I thought Mighty Bomb Jack was Bomberman. So people would say, like, oh, you play that Bomberman? It's really good. I'm like, that side-scrolling game where the guy who looks like Captain Crunch throws bombs? No thanks.
I'm throwing bombs.
Mighty Bomb Jack, where are those soggies?
Kids love old people. Buy sugar. But let's move into music as we close out. There are new albums by Born to Mac. Born to Mac by Too Short. And Sheila E., her third album. All songs written by her and Prince. And Soy Como Quiero Ser by Luis Miguel. But number one is Alone by Heart. And that will take us out as we travel into 1997. Stay with us, people. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
I went to Las Vegas for the weekend for a bachelor party.
That's why you couldn't watch Spider-Man. I think we had the better weekend.
We were staying at a place where, like, oh, yeah, there's just always beer. So it was a fun trip. Like, the place we stayed at was fucking amazing. Like, rented an Airbnb of this dude who... It was
what?
A five-bedroom, five-bathroom...
Holy God.
...house with... Outside, there was a giant pool with a water slide and a fucking grotto in
water
the back.
Water slide?
Wow.
Love water slides.
But the problem is... We were probably, like, a mile from the Strip. If we wanted to get food, like, we had to order it. And, the thing I love about Vegas is you eat shittily, too.
Buffets.
Like, we ordered shit from, like, Safeway.
Oh, that's awful.
And more than half of the stuff we ordered, they were like, we didn't have it, so we just... Here's your order.
There's crackers and cheese.
There's no bacon in this order. There's no, like... So, just have eggs. No, we were eating extremely shittily, like... Homer making a meal for himself, kind of like...
Some moon waffles are being passed around.
No, cloves and fucking
and
Tom Collins mix. Yeah. Let's go get your mother.
I looked into it because apparently that's what cruise ship dining is, too. It's just one, like, prolonged buffet.
Yeah, that fucking failed music festival. Fire music festival. That's what we were eating.
Oh, shit.
But I shat in five different bathrooms, which is nice. I made that my mission. I'm like, look, I'm going to find every bathroom here and shit in it.
Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly. Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly.
None of us can stand the rain, but we love Missy Elliott's Rain Super Duper Fly. Off
first time she busted out the big trash bag.
I don't know.
I think so, because I think this is her debut studio album.
This was the trash bag video. Mm. If you remember, it's 20 years ago. And God, it's 20 years ago. Mm. The 97 section always makes me the saddest, because that really, in my mind, it should not be 20 years
ago. We're still a couple years off of... Yeah. That one.
I don't even know what that was. I'll be missing you.
Like a vulture.
Speaking of fluorescent lights and fisheye lenses, Puff Daddy's I'll Be Missing You is still number one.
Still number one.
We have new albums. Dandy Warhol's Come Down, I Will Stand by Kenny Chesney, Surfacing by Sarah McLachlan, which includes Angel and Building a Mystery.
Wow.
Both fantastic songs.
I listened to that album a million times, and I know that Dandy Warhol's album just because it was... That documentary about the Danny Warhols versus the Brian Jonestown Massacre. Yeah, it did. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Pretty good. If you want a fun music documentary about the 90s American music scene, give it a watch.
Two bands that could, but kind of didn't.
Dandy Warhols did it slightly more, thanks to being popular in Europe.
Heroin is so pensive. But we are at 1997 now, people. That music wasn't obvious in the 20 portion of the show. And in news this week, fashion designer Gianni Versace is murdered at age 50. I forgot all about this.
Shot at his mailbox.
By who? A stalker?
By a serial killer.
Holy shit.
Wow. By a cross-country serial killer. I mean, he was sort of like not quite a gigolo, I guess, sort of a rent boy, I guess you'd call him. He liked to hang out with older rich men. Yeah. That was his thing, and get presents from them.
A noble profession.
Mm. Well, sure, whatever. That's fine. But
no judgment
They're not, it seems like no one's really sure why he just started killing people. He killed a couple guys at their house, stole their car, drove to like Chicago. This was like in California or somewhere. He drove to like Chicago, killed another guy. And, yeah, Versace was his fifth victim, I think.
Serial killer imply that he wasn't seeking out Versace specifically to
kill? They're not sure. There's some rumors that they might have met. They might have, I mean, or it could have just been he went to Miami and he went to a random dude.
Holy shit,
it happened to be for Gianni Versace, huge designer.
I remember Eminem had a tasteless rap about this thing.
Yes,
like,
he did.
Hey, I'm Gianni Versace, and somebody shot me while I was out checking the mail, huh? Get it? Checking the mail.
He's gay.
Yep. Nice
yeah,
one,
so
Eminem.
Now the guy...
Eminem and gays really go together.
Yeah, so no, the guy that killed him, he's based a gay serial killer, and I remember... at the time, he kills himself a couple days later. And,
That's why there's few answers on this.
Mm. Yeah, there's all kinds of... I remember the media speculation at the time was, well, maybe he found out he has HIV and he decided to take everyone with him. And it's like...
It was every gay hysteria you could tag onto it.
That is so... That is, yes. How many years old is... We're so past that idea. Yeah. God.
Not a lot is known about the gay cancer, but it's kind of like rabies.
Yeah, yeah, it turned out... No, mad. No, of course, no, he didn't. No one's really sure why he decided to start killing people. And who was he targeting specifically and why? And yeah, we don't know. But the next American Crime Story is going to be all about
it. Is it really?
Yep.
Oh, right. Damn, right. I can't wait.
Well, wow, this is going to be quite the transition into movies. George of the Jungle.
another fashion icon.
I loved this movie. I really did. It was really funny. It made me laugh.
Deep in the African jungle lives a mysterious figure. His name is legendary. His strength is remarkable. And his theme song is pretty good, too.
I do love the theme song.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, it's the only like legit cover song on a Weird Al album. 1986's Dare to Be Stupid. There's just him doing this song. And so I loved it. I love this theme song. It's weird because this is Brandon Fraser's first of two Jay Ward cartoon characters.
That was very weird. That's what it is.
Dudley Do-Right.
Oh.
Well, yeah, so the George the Jungle was... It kind of went through a new... It got popular again in the 90s because Rocky and Bullwinkle got popular again in the 90s and both got movies. And but this was way better than the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie.
Hey, the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie has about 30 solid minutes in it.
I love that
And
movie.
Then there's a lot of bad parts.
So what's the plot of this movie? He meets the biggest tree in the world?
No,
literally gets taken out of the jungle.
It's a Tarzan movie, except goofier. And Leslie Mann is the woman who discovers him in the jungle and takes him to society and introduces him to it. But he has problems fitting in society.
There's I get mad at this for
is
a lot of reasons.
Because he uses the N-word?
Yeah. there's actually a scene that was very exciting to me as a young man, which is George of the Jungle like showers at her place and then just comes out naked and Leslie Mann is like, oh no, you have to he's like, well, he doesn't understand why being naked after a shower is weird, and she then like puts a serving dish over his junk and makes him walk away.
You know, her friend,
Leslie Mann and her friend are checking her out in the way that women in 90s films do, like, oh, check out those buns.
Someone was speaking about the inexplicable popularity of Brendan Fraser and that he is lust-worthy by both men and women in ways that I just didn't understand. That's why he was a leading man in so much garbage.
Well, and he started in like Gods and Monsters, which a lot of actors in his caliber have been like, I'm not doing this gay shit.
Yeah, it's such a great movie. There was a controversy around Ghost in the Shell, and I'm like, you're right, whitewashing, bad. Worse to me, don't make an live-action movie based off cartoons.
Just
there's no reason
that.
For that.
No.
You can
ever.
Just make an animated movie.
We're already jungled out this year with Jungle to Jungle.
Another jungle movie. It's the same fucking premise.
Yeah.
And also the ape, the gorilla puppet, and it's not so great.
Not so great.
I was great at drumming.
And this is when I never saw Runaway Brain the last 2 years, but Runaway Brain was released with this in theaters. I just looked it up that run on
I
some
was kidding, King
oh no it was with a ton of Disney films in 95 and 96. When we get to 97, if a place is not showing Disney trailers, then they gave them Runaway Brain to show beforehand. It was shown in some theaters with Hercules and with this ahead of time, but only some theaters. I was lucky enough to be in that theater.
And it's such a great short, kind of the last true Mickey Mouse Disney short.
For a time, too dirty for Disney, but now they've embraced it.
Kelsey Grammer appears as a mad scientist and is like murdered immediately in this cartoon, which is beautiful and all about Mickey going insane.
It was Mickey trying to exist in the land of Ren and Stimpy.
I'd say Google it, but it's impossible. Disney has like cleansed it from the earth, except that I was able to upload it to LaserTime's Facebook. So look up LaserTime on Facebook. That video is in there full HD. It's the only place I could put it without getting internet sued. This next movie was the first time I saw, like, wait, Martin Lawrence can be in something I don't like? Nothing to Lose.
One's only in it for the action.
Not bad.
Free! The other's only in it for the money.
Smack me two times.
Together, they're two outlaws.
Who's in control now?
Only a mother could love.
What?
Nothing to lose.
Is this the movie where Tim Robbins is handcuffed to somebody the whole time, or is that a different movie?
You're thinking Bulletproof. Yes. I confuse it with Bulletproof because it's essentially the same plot.
No, that's Adam Sandler in a way.
Damon Wayans. Yeah.
Damon Wayans, yes. That is not.
Or the Defiant Ones with Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier.
Yeah, Tim Robbins and.
I watched another trailer and I like this, the basic setup of Tim Robbins comes home, finds his wife fucking someone else, and just drives off catatonic and freaking out,
throws his gun in the river, but goes to jail anyway,
right,
only to escape.
Okay. Shot a fish.
and then he gets carjacked by Martin Lawrence and he starts terrorizing Martin Lawrence instead of just acquiescing, and then Martin Lawrence starts robbing places and wackiness.
Yes.
I'd
watch Bad Boys before
a sturdy
this.
Yet forgettable comedy from the mid 90s also. Mm-hmm. But there's other interesting movies. Is this a straight to VHS Swan Princess sequel, Escape to from Castle
Mountain? It was listed among the release this week. I just thought it might spark something in somebody. But
I was hoping Diana will remember this better than me. Crash.
Yep.
With James Spader.
Good
and
Crash.
Not that one, not the other one. You know,
there's no such thing as a good
Crash.
These
are the people
crash,
who like to fuck after argue. Crashing cars, right?
Yes. People who like to fuck after crashing cars.
Expensive fetish, by the way.
Weird, dangerous, stupid.
Yeah.
And I found this movie incredibly boring for a movie that is like nonstop sex scenes.
Yes, licking open wounds.
James Spader fucks Rosanna Arquette's giant leg wound.
That really happened.
In a car.
It had an NC-17?
I think so.
I like this movie fine, but I love Roger Ebert's review of it. It's one of his best reviews where he talks about how what it fetishizes, that it's just about fetishes in general, but how it picks such an extreme fetish to discuss it. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And it's way better than racism is bad, but aren't we all racist? I'd watch it before that.
I just honestly found it really boring. I never thought I'd say that about a movie with much sex and a bunch of actors I really like.
It was incredibly controversial. I think it was made a year or two ago, shelved, it got the equivalent of an X rating, and by the time we got our hands on it in video store shelves, we're like barely old enough to see this film. Mm-hmm. And we were bored out of our fucking minds.
Yeah, you'd be better off stealing a Playboy VHS.
Yeah, it's a bunch of, sort of boring sounding people talking about something, and then they fuck on a car.
Or in bleachers.
Yeah. And then they sort of sadly talk about something, then they fuck on a car.
But an interesting movie, because that's what David Cronenberg does.
What a betrayal of like the most awesome idea to 16-year-old me, which is like these people get in car crashes and then they fuck.
Yeah, man.
I'm like, yes. I like both of those things very much.
And they ejaculate guitar riffs. It's amazing, dude. You gotta read my screenplay. It's one page long. But also in across the pond, July 18th, 1997, The End of Evangelion movie premiered.
Yes.
Yeah.
The End of Eva movie, the very long-awaited movie.
We're going to do our best to engage Diana on this.
Summer in Japan, by the way. Back-to-back weeks, we got Mononoke.
And then this. Yeah. So, in case you don't know, quick version, Neon Genesis Evangelion first debuted in Japan in 1995, and it was a huge hit. It was a mecha series, but in a post-David Lynch world of weird mindfuckery and going into your brain, and about also depression and abuse
it's a very mature cartoon.
Yes. But it also had goofy sex jokes and giant robot fights.
Yes, and a pet penguin that lived with
it. And a pet penguin, Peng-Pen. Now, the interesting thing that happened on the show is that it was super popular. In its 16th episode, it was also run by Hideki Anno. He was the mastermind of it, and he's a
director of the recent Godzilla film.
Yes, but
star of Wind Rises.
But Anno is a very difficult director sometimes. But that's also what I love about him. He does the 16th episode, or the 18th episode, and the
final
NHK.
Episode.
Well, no. So NHK tells him it can't be this violent. He refuses to cut it, and it is literally a river of blood in that episode. And they then NHK cuts the budget on all the rest of the episodes. So when they get, the last six episodes have a ton of scenes of no one moving and just
reuse
staring.
Footage.
Just
and
like anime usually does.
When they have no budget. And the show.
Oh, no, there's at least 15 whole minutes of cicada bugs in this series.
So Otto has no budget and actually has no way he really wants to end it without money. So the last two episodes are kind
clip
of just
shows.
Like fucking around clip shows, but and a ton of exposition, and it's kind of him just dealing with his shit of just like, oh, what, you want a dumb high school drama? Here's 2 minutes of that. Mm. Did you like that? Fuck you. He just, like, is basically the last episodes are fuck you to people. Then we find out there's going to be a movie. There's going
to
be two movies.
To have the real ending.
That will give you your real ending. They have one movie that's just a clip show, a second movie that is 30 minutes of End of Eva. Mm. To milk every dollar they can. And then they finally put out End of Eva, which is the actual finale movie. And it's also a fuck you to you. But it is, you get some of the best animated fight scenes I've ever seen.
So they put out a movie that was a clip show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the second movie, they're expecting you to come back, you stupid bastards. Give us more of your
money. That's why I don't include Japanese releases in a lot of my animation history, because they've been making these movies forever, and sometimes they're not exceptional.
Yeah, sometimes they're just three episodes stapled together. Yeah.
They reanimate some scenes to make it better. I'm being an apologist for it. But anyway, so the End of Eva movie finally comes out. It's supposed to fulfill all your dreams, and it also is a fuck you to the audience. He literally has a clip in it.
The whole
show
is about a prophecy of the end of the world.
Yeah. So you're waiting for the end of the world in a giant big fight. And what happens is really the end of the world is hugging people until they explode into yellow liquid. And then all their souls go up into a naked man woman who's accepting them through their stigmata stuff. Mm. That's literally what happens. And I love it.
This was about robots a minute ago, wasn't it?
It's completely
Please
insane.
Remember this next time I get flack for liking Lost.
Is this where it ends with the main character, young boy, fucking his dad's clone?
No, actually, he's more in love with the male version of the clone of his mother. He decides not to fuck the clone of his mother.
Was the movie also where he jizzed on his hand?
Yes,
when
he jerks off to an unconscious girl, and it's fucked.
Comatose,
it is fucked up.
His comatose coworker.
And then everybody.
I suddenly want to watch Crash like 8 times to get the smell out of my nose.
So just imagine that you wanted the real ending to Evangelion, and that's what you got. And then there's a 7-minute scene of a song about why somebody chooses to commit suicide. Like, that's the. It's called Calm Susertad.
It's called Suicide is Painless.
But I do love it. It is stupid.
It's unforgettable.
So, but this is the ending that has the, you did it, congratulations.
No, that's the 26th episode.
Okay.
Which was also like, that was at least an emotionally fulfilling ending compared to the last line in that was congratulations. Well, actually, thank you, mother, thank you, father. That's the end of it. But that's how I learned the word for the Japanese word for congratulations, omedeto, because they say it 80 times. They're like, omedeto, Shinji, omedeto, omedeto.
Are they done remaking these movies yet?
No. So, End of Eva ends. Hideki Anno will go to conventions and basically say, like, fuck you for wanting a better ending. You got what you got.
It was one of my first favorite YouTube clips. This fan gets up and, like, it's just that you'd promised all these things, and these Evas were manifestations of our innermost demons and from the core of the earth and our souls, and that you wanted to wrap up everything, and we just found the ending dissatisfied. And he slowly leans to the microphone, pulls out his only English. Too bad.
Exactly.
It's awesome. It's it was awesome. So,
can he go on a road trip with Werner Herzog, maybe?
Well, now, and I do want to say, too, as an Eva fan, this movie was difficult for me because... Mm-hmm. It was so expensive in Japan, and they were charging such a high licensing fee for it that the company that did the show in America couldn't afford to put out the movie.
You had to buy
movie.
It separately.
So I had to...
Real fire walk with me situation.
It was either wait 3 to 4 years for Manga Entertainment to finally release it in America, or do what I did and... send a money order to a guy over the internet who says he will send you a VHS of his fan sub. Yeah. That's how it was before the internet. I sent $25 in a self-addressed stamped envelope to somebody, and 3 months later, I finally got it and watched it.
But, I do remember this. Yeah. And Diana, Eva is kind of a gold standard for good show.
I know, I've heard of it, and I was surprised with it, you know, it's so well-regarded and so many fans that, it's not all that long.
Mm-hmm. It's only 20-something
episodes and two-ish movies. Or there's the 4 movies. So then Anno came back to the series about 8 years ago.
It's the most Star Wars special edition thingy ever.
That is the first movie. And then movies 2 and 3 are like, I'm doing new stuff, and it's even weirder. And he promised the 4th movie is about 3 years overdue. And people are like, wait, you're making you're making Shin Godzilla. Why aren't you making the 4th movie? He's like, I'll make it someday. So you'll never get the 4th movie.
It's pretty nuts.
If it's not Hideki Anno if he's not torturing his fans.
Well, we've got to bounce over to TV for July 14th.
So I got both of these here.
Through the 20th.
July 14th, Roar premieres on Fox. It is a Celtic fantasy series that is a total ripoff of Hercules and Xena, but the reason it's memorable is that it starred a 20-year-old Heath Ledger.
Oh my gosh.
This is the first step towards uniting our land. Now when we fight for each other, for our freedom, our future.
Scotland will be roar.
Like, it's Ireland.
I know.
That's a pretty weak accent.
Man, that's like, yes. He's, what, 2 years off from 10 Things I Hate About You and really breaking out into America.
Yep. Yeah, but so he, gets cast on the show. 8 episodes aired, and then they canceled it. 5 episodes.
It's pretty expensive and just wasn't an immediate hit.
Imagine, though, this a divergent timeline where Roar is a hit, Heath Ledger stays on this, never makes... any of the Batman movies.
Steve
never hits
Gutenberg
that...
is the Joker.
Yes, and never dies.
He just does 8 years of this show.
Yep.
Carrie Russell's
Broke
also...
Brokeback Mountain co-stars Tobey Maguire.
Carrie Russell is a guest in the first episode and is his wife who is murdered, which leads him to do it. So, yeah,
man,
it's 5 episodes went unaired until 2000 when Sci-Fi got the rights to it.
This is so... The biggest TV news for me was the 15th through the 18th. I can read off the copy you put in. The powerhouse era of Cartoon Network debuts. It is no longer a cemetery of old Hanna-Barbera and Warner Brothers cartoons, buoyed by Two Stupid Dogs, the only new and original piece of animation.
They call it Powerhouse because of like the way that they did bumpers. Like, I guess before Powerhouse, it was like grid style, where it was like just faces and squares. And then Powerhouse is, a lot of commercials had the Powerhouse.
A lot of Raymond Scott music. Debuts with a slightly different logo, replacing the checkerboard style that fit in character portraits alongside the letters. And premiering on Cartoon Network this week. To note the changes, Johnny Bravo, Cow and Chicken, and I Am Weasel, the second round of What a Cartoon graduates following Dexter's Laboratory.
Dexter, if you remember, listen to a year ago on this podcast, we talk about the premiere of Dexter. It was the What a Cartoon series was a series of pilots for original programming. Yeah. Like, Cartoon Network's first original programming was Moxie, if you remember Moxie.
Was it the Bobcat Goldthwait
dog? It was a Bobcat Goldthwait CG dog that they're like, it's a live cartoon.
But he was like a fucking Bozo the Clown. He threw to old Popeye cartoons.
It was terrible. And and they also had like, they had another of those shows hosted by Carrot Top. Then they did Space Ghost, but then they commissioned a series of shorts in that.
It was great. I just remember I was getting 3-2-1 contact in the mail at this point, and they came with stickers for these What a Cartoon things. They're on my closet forever. Yeah. And then I finally saw the shorts that debuted in the What a Cartoon show, which was sort of like, not necessarily liquid television, but like you said, pilots.
And Johnny Bravo was, I thought,
it was
the
my
most
favorite.
Popular of the first run, but they went with Dexter first.
And then Powerpuff?
No, so they get a year of Dexter in 96. Mm-hmm. Then it takes another year. They commission 2 more. Dexter's so popular, they're like, let's spend the money on Johnny Bravo and Cow and Chicken and technically Johnny I Am Bravo. Weasel, but it's the co-show with that. And then they're like, okay, now we'll do the Powerpuff Girls show. And so 98. So, in a year from now, look forward to
talking about
that. I had
these stickers on my closet for years. Like, when I'm like pubescent and half an alcoholic and like, where the fuck is the Johnny Bravo show?
Hey, little mama, how about you and I spending a little time mano a mano or stereo? Where are you going? I'm a dancer, romancer. You're a Capricorn, I'm a Cancer. Wait, come back.
Johnny Bravo, today at 10:30 a.m. on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, but just the launch of Cartoon Network original programming, which is so fucking good right now.
Well, it's nutty to think of a time where Cartoon Network had maybe 2 hours of original programming on their thing, and the rest was musty old cartoons. Yeah. Now it's all original programming. You will never see Bugs Bunny on Cartoon Network.
No, they still occasionally play Bugs Bunny.
Do they
Bunny.
Really?
You know what? It might be holding that for the launch of Boomerang or whatever that I still haven't subscribed to. But what really bums me out about this, and it's kind of something you see with a lot of channels as they're getting started, is that these cartoons are not treated very well. I think Dexter's Lab and Johnny Bravo, Powerpuff, and to a only a slightly lesser extent, Cow and Chicken. And Courage the Cowardly Dog is something I caught on to later. You can't buy them anywhere. They don't show them anywhere. They might be streaming on their app. Maybe.
They might now be on Boomerang. Like, now they've become Boomerang worthy.
Yeah, they got no DVDs or they got unfinished DVD sets. And it was like, these were your flagship shows in the beginning. But it's like, but that was our beginning.
It was their
Watch
beginning.
Watch us now.
Yeah, that was just what they were stuck with. Now because those were the best What a Cartoons. Their brand... Their brand outgrew it quite a bit. Like, Ed, Ed and Eddie was a bigger hit than those shows.
Yeah, just a terrible name for what a cartoon show.
Yeah.
Also debuting this week was Rick and Morty Season 2. We have been waiting 20 years for Season 3. Ah. Or it's only felt that long. I'm sorry.
But yeah, the What a Cartoon Show is where you can find a Seth MacFarlane show with about a man who talks like this with a talking dog who talks like Brian, but it's Seth MacFarlane got to start making those cartoons.
Yeah, he worked on Cow and Chicken, including, which is full of the tasteless. I didn't put in a Cow and Chicken clip because their voices drive
me insane. Yeah. But I want to give them insane amount of credit for making one of the main characters the fucking devil.
Yes. Who walks around nude the entire time.
The very, very bulbous, shiny butt. Oh, yeah. But yeah, love the Cartoon Network. I deeply miss these shows. I'm sure you people out there feel the same. But let's bounce into games before we head into 2007. Oh, the games of 1997. July 17th.
I guess technically it is Games 1997. It's a Namco Museum Volume 4. So if you remember Namco
PlayStation.
Yeah, so there was a five game collection, five compilation collection, one for each letter. Like, so the first volume had a big N on the cover.
I loved that. I wanted to see them on my shelf all together.
And then Volume 5, going up to Volume 5 was O, so N-A-M-C-O. But the thing is, 1, 3, and 5 all had good Pac-Man games. So they are plentiful, and they became greatest hits. 2 and 4 have not-so-popular Namco games, so they became rarities. And this is, I think, maybe the rarest of the batch, because fucking look
games.
At these
I
games.
Love this set of weird-ass games.
Pac-Land, Return to Ishtar, Genji and the
Heike Clans,
Assault Plus, and Ordine.
Yes.
Anybody Ordine?
I was happy to get this to play Pac-Man because unless you had the vintage arcade machine somewhere around you, there was no way to play this in 1997.
I still don't know how to play Pac-Man. What is it, a platformer?
It's a pretty terrible PC port.
It's Pac-Man is a platformer before they knew what those were.
Yeah.
It is a pre-Super Mario Brothers platformer. So it's
no single screen maze. Mm-hmm. You're Pac-Man. No. You have a fucking hat and a house.
But it is.
I gotta find my stogies. Where my stogies?
Wait, Pac-Man. If you open a door, are you on a toilet like on that other game?
Oh, so it's an auto scrolling platformer too. So you just have to make him jump at certain times, and he is drawn sort of like how he was in the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, except in the very Japanese way of like. No, he has a little hat on, and he has a long nose, and then little boots. And
I'm so glad the note, get rid of Pac-Man's nose. Diana's actually wearing him his Pac-Man shirt right now.
I
don't like video games.
No, she's a feminist icon.
Yeah. And I did love the museum games. It's why I've actually bought the museum games whenever they've been available on like PSN for Vita, which pretty much I think every letter now is ready, but that they made a horrible-looking fake museum.
I love that.
A virtual museum within it of just like, it's a first person exploration of a polygonal museum.
You are Pac-Man technically walking around the museum visiting like, this is the Pac-Land exhibit. And
look,
we did.
It's a classic game.
A couple of months ago we did Namco Museum Volume 3 where one of the rooms is Miss Pac-Man room. So you walk in, it's Miss Pac-Man and the dog dancing. Then you open the door, you are Pac-Man, but you also see Pac-Man on the toilet.
Yeah.
It is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in a video
game. It's such a great...
And then some guys come out of the woods and they start tearing your flesh off and David Lynch starts laughing off camera.
Instead of just giving you the art or like, here's the original box art, it says like, no, it's a thing on a wall and you walk to it. And look
I really hope they're... 20 years later, there is going to be a Namco Museum game on Switch. I hope they keep the bizarre exhibit.
Yeah, I think
this, aspect.
It's a great, dumb shell that doesn't have to be a good game to interact with. But let's go out. Yeah, let's go out with the Dandy Warhols. Not if you were the last junkie on Earth. Their MTV Buzz clip that almost launched them into worldwide stardom. But we love this song. We bought
it's a
the
fun song.
It was one of our songs of that summer. Heroin is so passe. I didn't even remember that this is the name of the song. Not if you were the last junkie on Earth. We get back in 2007. 2007 stuff.
Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of July 14th through 20th, we got a couple good ones. 50 years ago this week, 1967, we've got the Gnomobile. Another one of those goddamn Disney live action. Not even talking about it. Skipping to Up to Down Staircase with Sandy Dennis, which is it's a pretty good teacher type movie, you know, where she's like, it's not quite like, I can't reach these kids. It's more like about her development as a person, that she's very nervous, and then she comes better. Yeah, it's a pretty good movie. But the one I'm definitely recommending this week is 75 years ago this week, July 14th, 1942, Pride of the Yankees, starring Gary Cooper, came out. You'll hear me talk about this some more if you're a fan of Talking Simpsons and you support that. There's a Talking Critic episode where I get to talk about Pride of the Yankees, too. Yay! Anyway, Pride of the Yankees is a film story of Lou Gehrig, who you might recognize his name from The Disease. He was one of the New York Yankees and, you know, obviously had ALS, and there wasn't an ice bucket challenge yet, and it's a really moving story. You think it's just going to be sort of like a boring baseball movie, and then it gets weepy at the end, but there's not as much baseball in it as I expected, and what there is really good. Fun fact, Gary Cooper could not learn how to hit left-handed like Lou Gehrig did, so he would hit right-handed and then run to third base, and then they'd flip the film over, and everyone had to wear backward jerseys and everything. Film magic! Anyway, yeah, Gary Cooper is an actor I feel like these kids today don't appreciate as just sort of like a great everyman kind of Kevin Costner kind of guy of just like always forthright and just a good guy all around. Yeah, so I really like Pride of the Yankees, total recommend, and that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Coming in with Thriller. Why?
Because this week in 2007, the Filipino prisoners doing the Thriller dance. Yes. Goes
oh my
viral.
God. Okay.
It's shocking surprised. To be at a 10th anniversary of a viral video.
Yeah,
but
yeah. The 10th viral video ever. Yeah. Jesus.
All the Filipino prisoners dancing to Thriller. So that's why we're hearing a 1984 song.
Yeah.
But Dave might take some issue because this is pop punk's time to shine
terms
of new releases.
7 years too late.
7 years too late.
I mean, these are like
Umbrella's still number one, but yeah. New albums from Rise to Your Knees by The Meat Puppets, Secret Weapon by MXPX, and Paper Walls by Yellow Card. And who could forget? Now that's what I call Music 25.
Yeah. 25.
I would say, I would say like around 2002, 2003, MXPX and Yellow Card were my jams. But at this point, I'm a little bit beyond
I don't know Secret Weapon at all.
I don't either.
But yes, in the news for July 14th through the 20th, on the 17th, the Filipino prisoners go viral. And on June 19th, web hosts, sick of repeated fake bids, bidders at auction, set the price of Goatsy.cx at $500,000. What?
Yes.
In 2009, they drop it to $15,000. Since 2012, it has been advertising as Goatsy Coin, coming soon. What?
That is so
Henry, do
weird.
Can I show you a picture of Goatsy?
No, I'd rather
too
not.
Too late, it
that
already
thing.
Came.
all right, let's move on. Let's get out of that tasteless gay joke, too.
Can someone just Photoshop saga... Porky Pig coming out of it and send it to Hank?
The
no.
saga of that stuff just cracks me up. The fact it was like there's... I think it's a couple years ago from 2007, so we missed it, where it's like the Christmas Islands, the home of the CX, .CX thing is like... They're going to stop Goatsy. It's like their chance to crack down on it. It's like the Christmas Islands in the middle of fucking nowhere.
What is this?
The goat, because it's Goatsy.cx. And
that
.cx
is
the
page for it. Yes.
Means.
Oh my God.
The Christmas Islands.
Oh my God. That's
so
awful.
So, yeah. But I want Goatsy Coin to happen. We need a new cryptocurrency that's based on
I'd prefer that to Bitcoin.
Extreme ass stretching.
All right. So let's move into the movies. Because oh Jesus, is this a highlight? I can't tell. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, starring Adam Sandler and Kevin James.
It's back when an Adam Sandler movie could be taken somewhat seriously. As a real release. It was kind of
number one at the box office.
Our domestic partnership is being challenged by the city.
You guys have nothing to worry about because you're a legitimate gay couple, right?
Oh yeah, we're big time fruits.
Oh, I like men.
the way they smell. And...
Okay.
So I did a dumb thing. It was about a year ago. I did a montage of Adam Sandler's product placement. Mm-hmm. So I did go back and watch all of these.
Adam Sandler Loves Food, I believe it's called.
Yes, yes. It was popular for a hot second. Now no one gives a shit. But this is the best of the worst, I would say. That period post Big Daddy, yeah, where he has complete freedom to do whatever he wants. Mm. It's the best of the worst. And surprisingly progressive for a movie tailor-made for just a barrage of gay jokes.
Well, it's kind of a trick he does in a lot of his movies. Mm-hmm. It's in Jack and Jill as well, mm-hmm, where they're just like, oh, we have a Mexican stereotype who will make terrible stereotypical jokes, but then say, I am only kidding, it's not a stereotype. I know it's a stereotype. And it's the same deal with this, of just like, it is not anti-gay.
No.
It is pro-gay people, but it lets
of people
them get away with every with every homophobic stereotype
and
they want.
A ton of objectification of what's her name,
Jessica Biel.
She is gorgeous in this film.
Well, so the film is about
it's about
gay
firefighters,
marriage, which is now a buried political.
It's
topic
weird because
in America.
This it makes this movie the most dated Adam Sandler movie because it's about two firefighters who pretend to be gay and get married.
It is about healthcare. So
yeah,
it's
I think
not
it's for the pension and the benefits and stuff. I actually looked it up to find at the time gay marriage was only fully legal in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
There were partnerships that were marriage in name only in 9 states and D.C. By the time of the Supreme Court ruling in 2015, which made gay marriage legal in all the states, mm-hmm, those numbers were flipped. There were only 13 states with the ban left. So
well, we're just
this is a weird little time capsule.
And we're a year away from
a couple states you could get married.
We're a year away from Prop 8 passing in California, which was huge news. And like, it's amazing to think that passed, like that it actually did. But it was thanks to the most fear-mongering ads I've ever seen. It was disgusting. But anyway,
well, in a weird way this could be fear-mongering, the idea of like, well, if we let gays marry, then like your roommates can get married, you know, to
it'll
cheat
just
the
be
system
a bunch of fakers.
I remember that being an argument.
People just get married
to their dogs for tax benefits.
Well, people just marry illegal immigrants whenever they want. It's like, you could do that now with opposite sex couples. Jesus Christ,
it happens all the time. And I felt like the Jessica Biel objectification was their gift to straight guys. Oh, they're like, look, if you get dragged to this, you're worried about it's going to be full of guys kissing. We'll let you see her in their underwear.
And I don't want
to. Do guys ever even kiss in the movie? I know the very end is supposed to be them like checking
like
me out.
Ving Rhames plays like a really good. It's just, I do like it's a bunch of manly people playing against
Ving
type.
Ving Rhames really goes for it. Nick Swardson, who I'm still shocked is not actually gay. It feels like one of those Adam Sandler jokes for himself in a movie, like, I'll cast Nick Swardson, who's not gay and everybody thinks he's gay, and make him gay and everything.
And he is in this film. But I will never go to bat for this film at all.
No way.
No.
But a movie with being this progressive towards the gay movement, it reached the audience you and I bitching on Twitter wouldn't.
Perhaps so, yes.
And to make it even more dated, like, it has flagrant use of the F word. Goes around, but in...
Because they're just a couple of guys.
Well, it's about Kevin James Adam Sandler getting, like, Brooklyn pissed and beating the snot out of fucks. Would you just call me? But here's a clip of Rob Corddry getting to say it into a megaphone.
That you have the right to dictate how other people live their lives.
I'm a minister. I'm allowed to preach in any public forum.
Well, I'm a fireman. I say you block an emergency access, and let's call it a night.
Whoa. You're a fireman.
You are a disgrace.
You're a flamer, is what you are.
There's no reasoning with these people. Just let it go.
Let it go.
See you later,
faggots.
I'm sorry. What did you call me?
Oh, I called you a faggot.
Faggot?
Adam Sandler's signature violence.
Accepted vernacular is gay.
Gay.
It's such a weird scene.
Beat someone up like
that. That's the solution in every Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah. By the way,
Adam Sandler's probably never thrown a punch in his life. He's always the strongest.
People who say don't punch Nazis, Adam Sandler says you should in the scene there.
It was Rob Corddry playing a Westboro Baptist preacher.
You know
type.
Who needs punching though?
Who's that?
Rob Schneider.
What for his Asian stereotype in the film?
No, he's horrible.
Super like beyond ching chongy Asian stereotype. Look, I know he's half Filipino. That does not give you license to do that with, I mean, fucking buck teeth and squinty eyes. Yep. Jesus Christ.
With a yarmulke?
Don't you get it's a joke?
No.
No, fuck him. Look, Rob Schneider is, he is the worst barnacle on the ship of Adam Sandler.
This is the most divisive thing that's ever been said.
I love that the movie is like, Rob Schneider. The thrust of this movie is like, you shouldn't be a bigot. You can still be racist, though. That's fine.
All right, but there's a way better, gayer movie this
week.
Yeah,
I've never seen this, but yes, Hairspray.
Woo-hoo. The musical.
That was our very own Link Larkin.
And I'm Motormouth Maybell, pitching rhythm your way.
Dancing on that show is my dream.
Want to be one of the nicest kids in town? Cut school tomorrow and come audition.
No one in this house is auditioning for anything.
But Mom! Amber?
Save your personal life for the cameras, sweetie. Oh!
Yeah.
Superstar cast. It is the musical adaptation of the John Waters classic Hairspray. Probably,
and get this, like the last John Waters movie of any kind.
Well, he's in it. He didn't direct it.
I know, but like he made like a movie a year.
He's not a
Cecil B. Demented. I love John
old
Waters.
Man. Yeah. Let him just do speaking tours and bask in the glow of people loving
him. It's great.
And I love John Waters. He has a cameo in this film as a flasher in the beginning. It's so great. both the musical and the original are really about segregation and about the not too long ago bullshit of segregation, and specifically in Baltimore, and how like having black music, let alone not black people, but black music on a pop music show, like American Bandstand show, was a hugely political act.
And that's what the original
is
about?
Yeah, all about that.
This is the musical version.
Well, and so, and it starred Ricky Lake in the original, and in this it was the debut of Nikki Blonsky, a full-figured gal who would normally not be the star in a movie, but she gets to be the lead in it, and everybody's like, you're dancing like a colored person. How can you? And she then she embraces that community and is just like, yeah, wait a minute, why am I doing it? And in both the original and in the musical, she gets with the hot dude who is technically with the teeny bopper star who her only problem is she's a fucking racist like everybody there. And Michelle Pfeiffer plays her mom in the movie. Yeah. John Travolta is the divine role he's in drag the whole movie, finally being who he wants to be, honestly.
Yeah. But he and Christopher Walken get a nice dance number.
Yeah,
that makes
beautiful.
Me very happy.
Yeah,
this is, I mean, this is a catchy as hell musical. All Mark Shaiman songs.
The music is great. It is a really great. I love the opening song, which is basically like town song. But
I think Mark Shaiman did the music for Bigger, Longer, and Uncut South Park.
You gotta watch Hairspray the musical.
He knows the template, and he works in that template. And yeah, the songs are so catchy, so much fun. Everybody knows that they're doing cheesy camp, and so lots of big crazy smiles, and we're gonna do stuff.
And also, yeah, Queen Latifah is in it as well. It's
His name?
Zac Efron.
Zac Efron's good.
He's great, and it showed. But the original is so awesome too. It's got Sonny Bono in it as a pro segregation mayor. Or congressman.
Debbie Harry
Debbie Harry is really good. I mean, both versions. Yeah. They're both.
You
great
should watch them both
ways.
Together.
Yeah.
Watched Polyester. This is an odd blind spot for me.
I watched the original Hairspray a million times because it was on Comedy Central all the time.
Yeah, I watched it.
I've never seen it, but we do need to seriously start celebrating John Waters before he's gone.
Well, he's still with us.
Not many people get to make 7 really fun, amazing, groundbreaking films, and John Waters did.
And get to be one of the best Simpsons guest stars ever.
This is true.
Absolutely.
This is true. And I like Pecker and Cecil B. DeMented, so shut up, everybody.
And Serial Mom. I love it.
And Serial Mom rules. Yeah. Polyester, Crybaby, Pink Flamingo, they're all great. I love John Waters. Make another movie, sir. But we also have another movie to celebrate this week. And thank God Diana just watched it.
Our sun is dying. Mankind faces extinction. 16 months ago, I, Robert Capa, and a crew of 7 left Earth frozen in a solar winter. Our mission, reignite the sun.
Don't laugh,
what?
Dave. Don't laugh.
All right, so
Sunshine.
It's the opposite of blowing up the moon.
It's a wonder. That's why I love Danny Boyle. I just finally got to see Trainspotting 2, and he never makes the same movie twice. And this is like in between Millions and Slumdog Millionaire. And like
this was a bit of a flop, though.
It was.
It was a bit of a flop. It's very watchable. Mm-hmm. I've said many times I'm a sucker for hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, you just put some mystery science into something, and then give us an idea of like, yeah, we're gonna go try to kickstart the fucking sun.
Yeah.
And we're going to deal with all this stuff, like the
cute
radiation.
Smash Mouth walking on the sun.
You know, the solar winds, the radiation. What's it going to do to our comms? How do we recycle air? How do we recycle water? We've got these giant shields. Oh, the shield's slightly misaligned because we miscalculated something. Fuck. Captain America's going to throw down with the Scarecrow. That's pretty cool.
It's funny to think of a time when it's like, well, no, Cillian Murphy's above the line. Chris Evans, you're a supporting dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so we got Cillian Murphy, or Cillian or Cillian? I've always
heard of Cillian.
I think it's Cillian.
Rose Byrne, Chris Evans, Michelle Yeoh. Well, fuck yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. Damn.
Yeah, she doesn't get to fight anybody. She could fight the sun.
I'm so glad she got cast on that new Star Trek show. Like, she's so underappreciated, Michelle Yeoh is.
So, yeah, they got to go, like, throw this bomb at the sun. Mm-hmm. And they're the second crew to go up there. And they don't know what happened to the first crew. And all of a sudden, they happen upon the ship. So it's kind of like an arty Event Horizon.
Yeah.
That's pretty much
it. Yeah, because when they arrive on the sun, it's like, I've never seen effects like this before in my life.
It's beautiful.
Sci-fi films like this get made like once every 2 or 3 years,
pretty much.
Maybe one of them. Well,
I also remember talking about seeing it with, you know, my coworkers at the time. It's like, that was such a great movie. I am not dying to ever watch again.
Mm. Yeah.
And I've never really felt like, I don't feel like that very often. That was cool. I'll never revisit
that. That's how I felt about Solaris.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Solaris.
Which is similar in name and in story.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's perfectly watchable. It's not a rush out and you have to see, but it's pretty damn solid. And it's very, very, very pretty to look at.
I think we should celebrate Danny Boyle until the cows come home. Mm-hmm. And if you're going through his whole, and you should, it's one of the most interesting filmographies of all time. So if you're doing that, hit up Sunshine. I don't know why I wouldn't recommend it harder, though. Honestly, it didn't do anything wrong, in my opinion. It's just a little slow.
Yes, a little slow.
It takes its time.
Yep.
But it's not bad. It's, hey, watch it instead of Passengers. How about that? I saw
that movie, and
that really irritated me. But moving out of the movies, we go into TV of 2007 from July 14th to
quite a week.
The 20th. Couple of nuts, but one big thing.
Oh, my God. The 15th, Rock of Love with Bret Michaels.
When that show started airing, it's when I realized Bret Michaels and other guys who wear bandanas are bald. Yeah. And, like, it was just that much exposure to Bret Michaels. Like,
I remember because he had, like, a fucking heart attack because he's secretly 50.
Yes.
And they show a picture of him in his hospital bed, and he's got a gown on and an IV in, and he's unconscious, and he has a bandana on still. You vain motherfucker.
Well, I would think that's his family, too. Just, like, we got to keep this illusion
going.
Wouldn't
want people to see
it would be humiliating
for
him.
So right now we're in the middle of the human centipede of VH1 reality shows that all spun off from each other. So let me see if I can remember it. I usually can. So you started with The Surreal Life, which then went on to the Flavor
of Love.
Flavor Flav with Bridget Nielsen. I forget what that was called. Then his own show, Flavor of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that came this. Rock of Love with Bret Michaels. And then there's
also the New York.
My Fair Brady.
Yes. Right. And then My Fair Brady was a slight outcropping. And then, I Love New York. And then I Love Money, which was people who were all on these dating shows competing for money.
I'm now mad curious to see what the fuck
and
is
then
on
they
VH1 right
they
now.
They canceled I Love Money after, I think, in the third season, which never aired because one of the contestants murdered his girlfriend.
Woof, boy. Well,
these people aren't stable and we're putting them on television? So, I don't believe it.
So
you have to be unstable if you want to touch Bret Michaels.
On July 16th, there was another reality show. It was Victoria Beckham Coming to America, which was a faux reality show that America didn't understand. So Victoria Beckham, a.k.a. Posh Spice, UK celebrity royalty. Yeah. She married to David Beckham, the greatest footballer.
Footy
ever. So
I went to lick him.
He's a very handsome man. But as Americans will do with soccer, they paid a shitload of money to make him play soccer for nobody here.
Galaxy.
So Beckham moves over to America with Victoria in tow, and they make a half-real, half-fake reality show about her coming to America. Mm. It airs in the UK, and they get the joke. It airs one night in America. Nobody gets the joke, and nobody watches it.
Wow.
But it was... It sounds like something I might actually want to re-explore.
Oh, my God. Sorry, I just read the next one.
Yes, July 17th, the Bill Engvall Show premieres. And
here's
the only reason anybody remembers this show is because of who's cast as his daughter on the series.
Mother? Father? Listen, I know you said you didn't want me to get pierced, but I want you to look at something.
Sweetheart, why is this so important to you?
Because it's cool. And it's a way to express my individuality.
Sweetie, it's a
Jennifer Lawrence.
That is Jennifer
Lawrence. And if you don't, I will shoot you with my bow and arrow.
Jennifer Lawrence, here's your sign. Your coattail riding can only go so far, Billy.
And yes, that she was the... It's such a lame, same old sitcom. It's just Home Improvement again, but she is the teenage daughter who in this episode, she's like, I want to get a belly button piercing. No, honey, you can't do it.
Not on TNN.
Yeah. So this is the scene where she tries to convince him of Bill Engvall
Bill Engvall, who just irritates me because I don't know that it's true. I'm just like, you're Jeff Foxworthy's brother-in-law.
He's lucky.
You're not friends, but you couldn't not give him a shot. They even have a new Netflix special with, like, Ron White is... a great comic, and he doesn't want to do everything blue collar comedy people do.
Yeah, the blue collar comedy, yeah.
They just cut Bill Engvall out. It's just Larry the Cable Guy and Jeff Foxworthy. So I imagine he divorced Jeff Foxworthy's sister. That's the only thing I imagine, because he was excruciating to watch. No, he's not fine. And then he spent 2 years manufacturing a catchphrase because Jeff Foxworthy had one.
Yeah,
and it was embarrassing to watch as a child.
Like, I remember from the Jeff Foxworthy roast on Comedy Central, they said, I think it was Ron White that said, if you play, you must be a redneck backwards. It says, here's your side. And yeah, that in the blue collar comedy tour, you had Jeff Foxworthy, who is the central figure to it. You've got the dirtier guy, Ron White. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the cartoon of Larry the Cable Guy. Mm-hmm. And then you've just got more Jeff Foxworthy in Bill Engvall.
And the rest.
Except he's like 5% less Southern.
Yeah, he did not deserve a
slot.
This
show ran for 3 seasons.
That's fucking impossible.
Then Jennifer Lawrence was free to star in movies.
And now she's still doing X-Men movies for some reason.
I would think a dump truck of money. Yeah. And probably they'll say, you will spend one day in the Mystique outfit, and that's it. But please.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Then I can't imagine. It's only a couple years till she does Winter's Bone, which is amazing.
Yeah, really good.
And she is incredible in it. And everyone's like, where the fuck did you find her? And they're like, Bill Engvall show. Yeah.
But now, removed just a couple months from what seemed like the end of an era of prestige TV, begins a new era of prestige television on AMC, July 19th. Mad Men debuts.
Yeah.
Yay. And I can hum the song.
Please rise for the Mad Men anthem.
Falling, 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 falling.
And so this is the big speech from the first episode.
It's a carousel.
Advertising is based on one thing. Happiness. And you know what happiness is? Happiness is the smell of a new car. It's freedom from fear. It's a billboard on the side of the road that screams with reassurance that whatever you're doing, it's okay. You are okay.
Damn.
Damn. That's why he won all them Emmys. Oh, wait, no. He won one, finally. Bryan Cranston kept taking all his Emmys. But yeah, that's...
I love
this show.
John Hamm, 10 years ago.
I have not finished it. Yeah, wow, I'm not I am over. I think I lost place on the DVDs, and I think it's because they don't have episode titles. So I never remembered where I was, and it just all blended together, and I never jumped back. I'm a season and a half behind on Mad Men.
Well, wow. I love the show.
After the divorce. Huh? Like, after he got
Betty Draper.
January Jones, they divorced in the show. It was like, I don't like seeing these people have separate lives.
Well, that's what
it gets kind of interesting. It's symbolic of the times,
So it was, in case
the
you didn't
The culture
know,
is fracturing.
Mad Men was a show set in the 60s and then the 70s about ad agencies in New York, and it was an amazing period show about how shitty America was back then and how it's different than you remember, and that John Hamm played the lead character, Don Draper, who was the biggest sham of a human ever, but that's what he was great at, presenting fakery, which is why he was the master ad guy. Yeah. And the first episode ends with the speech that he would give many times of I'm going to save this ad pitch by telling you why these cigarettes really are great.
It's basically like a 7-season long Armin Tamzarian storyline.
That's true. It is. And John Hamm, who had not really started in, he'd been in stuff. You can find him in movies, but he was nearing 40 and wasn't a star. Yeah. And then he gets cast, and this is perfect for a handsome, depressed dude for him to play. And the first episode cost $3 million, one of the most expensive pilots ever.
It looks really good.
And it has such a great twist at the end of, you realize you're seeing him, fuck around. You're seeing him drink all the time. you think he's just a single dude, and then he goes home to his family in the suburbs, and you're like, oh. And the show was great at those little reveals like that. The show
had two separate lives.
Matthew Weiner, the creator and showrunner of it, Weiner. He created the show back when he was writing for Becker. And
wow.
But then he used that as a spec script to get him a job with David Chase on Sopranos. Uh-huh. And David Chase was like, this is an amazing script. You must write for Sopranos. So Matt Weiner works on Sopranos mm-hmm. to the end. Mm-hmm. And then everybody wants what's next for Matthew Weiner, but when he shares it with Showtime and HBO, they pass. They're like, mm-hmm. eh, don't need it.
Yeah, you're right. This is the beginning of AMC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
AMC's first original.
Taking the end out of their name.
HBO whiffed on not getting this. This could have been their next Sopranos. Instead, AMC gets it and becomes the next HBO. Yeah.
That's right. Remember, people, at this time, AMC stood for the American Movie Channel.
Yes. American Movie Classics.
American Movie Classics. Well,
they used to run old Westerns without ads.
Yeah.
Well, and this kind of throwback at least fit with its original thing, but this then helped the channel drift of like, well, now it's just prestige TV is on there. Walking Dead would follow. Mm-hmm. Breaking Bad would follow.
Bad is the next big one.
And a bunch of shows I feel guilty for never having watched.
Well, and that Mad Men was a difficult show for AMC, too. That Matthew Weiner kind of knew they had him over a barrel, so he could be...
Well, because...
He was hella secretive.
Because Sony owned it.
Yeah.
And
Lionsgate. It was Sony and Lionsgate.
And Lionsgate, and I believe Walking Dead is the first show that AMC owned outright. And, mm-hmm. and once that became a hit, it was kind of like, fuck you to every other show.
This is more popular than Mad Men.
We own every piece of it.
But they could have never done Walking Dead if not for Mad Men being so
true.
Huge.
And I did, just Googling this, the first season it became such a hit so fast. Mm-hmm. And then a big long gap between that and the second season. That the original advertising was from the writer of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
And that's never mentioned again after the first season. It was good enough you didn't need to mention The Sopranos.
Well, Matthew...
This is a great show. I feel like it's a great show. I'm almost wanting to binge it again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I feel like each season is sort of a giant movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly.
And to watch it, without commercials.
Well,
and
Matthew
that.
Weiner...
And the acting is so good. Oh, and the psychology of the characters are so good. Mm-hmm. And Peggy Olsen, I love you so much.
Watching her get fucked against her will in Handmaid's Tale
wants me to go back.
This show had so many breakout stars. John Hamm, who had been like toiling away forever. Christina Hendricks.
Yes.
Oh my God, Christina Hendricks.
John Slattery, who was on a ton of stuff, but this is this really made the John Slattery role.
And look closely in the first season, you'll see the progressive girl constantly with less makeup.
Yeah. Oh, and Rich Sommer, I love Rich
Sommer.
Alan
Glow.
The guy who played Pete Campbell, he's awesome.
He's apparently a crazy person.
That's what I love about him.
Half the cast of L.A. Noire.
Yes, the cast of L.A. Noire.
It was an amazing show that I liked.
Another of the Murray brothers, but not that one or the other one.
Joel Murray, does he piss his pants?
Pissing his pants and pouring himself a full glass of lit whiskey, literally to the top of a glass.
He's part of
I love that episode. It's my favorite
one. The show is like, it's, I don't know, truth and showing how disproportionate all this wealth is distributed and how shitty life is for women. But also how much America sucked for everybody.
Everyone
of these guys seems like
they're all the time.
Yeah, they're dealing with cirrhosis and lung cancer and they're miserable.
Coming
back
from war.
Yeah.
I mean, in the second or third episode, they deal with Betty, the shame she has over going to a therapist.
Yeah.
They're like, how can you do
that? It's just this giant parade of nobody being happy.
Yeah, and the sexism of, the therapist tells everything to her husband.
Yeah, or when
because,
Peggy...
Because, she's property, I guess.
In the first episode, when Peggy gets birth control, that the way the doctor goes, like, I don't just give this to whores, okay? So don't do
and
this.
It costs
Alison Brie. Yeah.
And it costs a significant amount of her income.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. It costs a lot of money.
To be sexually free.
To just not get pregnant, which, oops.
Or also when he's...
I thought the show was great, and if you hate business culture, it holds up real well.
Yeah. I think it's funny amazing. That I thought my mom would love this show because the way it's commenting on all this stuff, and she's like, I can't watch it because I lived through it. I don't want to see it. I'm like, but that's the thing. It's not... If you're getting glorification out of it, you're not getting it.
Yeah, my mom...
It's a commentary on all of this.
My mom didn't like it either, and I just look at old pictures of her, and like, this looks like the phenomenal set design of Mad Men.
I feel like this isn't quite like as... taken the wrong way as like Wolf of Wall Street, but this I think this also gave like a generation of bros like we fucking drink in the office, we're like Mad Men,
this is like a Mad Men place,
surprisingly little of that because they all kind of hate each other.
Oh, they always drink in the office though.
But they're just all awful to each other. Smiles, everyone's miserable.
Everyone is miserable.
I loved Sal in the first season, but then they tell he had to go away, and I also liked that he just disappeared into the woods.
Yeah.
and Also, in the first episode, Fly the Conchords, Kristen Schaal is one of the phone operator ladies, but she couldn't come back for the rest of the series. If you remember when Christina Hendricks shows her the phone bank, shows Peggy the phone bank.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love that. I love that show. 92 episodes ended in 2015 because it took them a real long time to make seasons, but they were always worth it when it happened. I love that Matthew Weiner had such control. He's like, no, fuck you. I'm not going to give anything away in this in the next week thing. Mm. I'm going to delay seasons to get more money for everybody. And fuck you, AMC.
Eventually became the first TV show to license a Beatles song.
Yeah. The a masters of a Beatles song. It cost him like $100,000. Crazy.
Even this groundbreaking show, still the first episode had to be like, hey, new character, let me show you around the office.
It's a pilot thing.
Every workplace
show They did use music
that.
Really well. I mean, one of my favorite things is like, there's a whole episode where it's just, you know, they're being mad men. They're all wearing suits and they're drinking. And then Satisfaction starts playing by the Rolling Stones. And you realize, oh, you guys are so fucking out of touch of what is going on right now.
Yeah.
Or like another time they're trying to hire the Beatles to do an ad.
Well, because
like,
they're trying to keep
kids.
The 50s going into the 60s and it doesn't go well for them.
Or John Slattery singing an Al Jolson song. Full makeup.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, we got to move on to... Vigigames, we missed it last week. E3 is at Santa Monica.
Yeah, that's Santa Monica E3 2007.
You're the only one here who attended that.
I went to this
It was E3
terrible,
going back to basics.
Event.
The video game Super Bowl, like saying, we've gotten too big. We got to make this smaller.
So I'd been to a couple E3s before this, but this is the first time I went to E3 with GamePro. So I was like, oh, finally developers will actually let me go see their games instead of being like, who are you? What are you from?
Which GameStop do you work for?
Yes. but it was a mess of a show because the ESA said they were losing money hand over fist every year using the convention center, so they decided to relocate to Santa Monica. And instead of having the LA Convention Center, they used the Santa Monica Airport, one of their hangars. That's where all of the games would be put. Like, that's the show floor.
Yeah.
But when you work in press, you typically don't see games there. You go to suites. And at LA Convention Center, it's not that inconvenient.
There's a ton of private rooms.
Yeah, but they're all, like, above the show floor, so it's totally convenient. It's not that tough. But for E3 2007... since there was no central location, you had to go to hotels that were all around Santa Monica. It was a big mess. And on top of that, since, you know, there isn't, the traditional E3 experience, a lot of developers did their own press conferences, a lot of small ones. Microsoft had their press conference at a high school football field, if you want to, again, know how things were downgraded. But they also have my favorite press conference. If you skip 10 seconds into this.
Hell yeah.
How's everybody doing?
Kennedy.
And I just want to say this place is the only place that makes the guys at Comic-Con look like Ocean's 13.
Jamie Kennedy.
That was his best joke.
He sucks.
He fails his delivery at his first joke.
He'll have to over there.
Well, we yelled about it a bunch in a recent Video Game Apocalypse.
Yes.
Corporate gigs are a thing in LA that people do all the time, but the difference is you never see them. So
they're filmed for the public.
He's angrily walking through this and not under the understanding that this is going to last forever on the internet.
Yeah.
And I think that I
what a
why am I standing up for Jamie Kennedy?
He was the martyr that
drunk,
let
drunk or high anyone.
Yeah, I'm going to say crunk.
He looks like he just woke up.
Yes.
So like I don't think he realized this was going to be broadcast to millions of people. Yeah. You know, he was probably
he manages
told.
To make Tony Hawk angry, which I've never seen before or after.
One of the nicest people I've ever met who has no reason to be as nice as he is.
Yes.
Tony Hawk rules.
And everybody's telling him he's not as funny as the other people. It's great.
But he was the martyr that let, like, Joel McHale and I'm forgetting her name from Archer.
Aisha Tyler.
They're great hosts who are also celebrities.
Also that week, Parappa the Rappa on PSP and Bomberman Live on XBLA. I think one of the biggest XBLA re-release at the time. Just finally
this is a ground
doing
up
that
game.
Doing that 20-year-old game incredible justice.
What was
so with an online mode.
Awesome with Bomberman. I heard the story of how Bomberman Live came together, and it's amazing that the Hudson had been putting out Bomberman games a ton in the 90s. Into the 2000s, they're like, we don't know what people want with Bomberman. They make what they think America wants with Bomberman Act Zero, which is Halo Bomberman, the worst. Everybody makes fun of it, but Hudson's like, but we thought Americans wanted this. For years, Hudson's America branch was like, just make a downloadable version of Saturn Bomberman. Yeah. Just do that.
With online play.
Hudson America fights tooth and nail to make Bomberman live. Hudson of Japan is just like, fine, put it out. It's going to fail. Fuck you. It sells crazy good.
Resurrects that brand.
And so then Hudson of Japan's response was like, we have succeeded. Make a Bomberman live every year. And Hudson of America's like, no, please, we can't. And they're forced to.
These are children.
And so then Bomberman is dead again by 2011 because they run it into the ground.
He's got a Switch launch game. That is pretty much the show, folks. Yeah. We're going to highlight a comment because we have a whole show for the people who support us on Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime. Every 2 weeks, we do a follow-up show using all your feedback, which is fucking awesome. I would call it a better version of this show based on solely on my contribution to it. Like, your comments are way better than mine. I love those anecdotes. And here's an example from our June 30th to July 6th episode, which focused on Men in Black, Adventures of Babysitting, Transformers, and Squid Spoon said, this is actually my birthday week. I would have been turning 5 and 15 in 97 and 07.
Wow.
I absolutely loved MIB as a kid, and that goes for MIB 2 as well.
No.
I haven't gone back and watched the second one for fear of tarnishing the good memories I have of it.
Don't.
However, I have gone back to the first several times and am pleased to say that everything about it still holds up. I agree. I also remember that there being Burger King kids' meal toys for that movie. I still remember the toy neutralizer I had that actually slid open and made sounds just like the real one. As for Transformers, I didn't actually see it until it came out on DVD months later. I remember loving it at the time, but I haven't watched it since, nor have I watched any of the sequels. In hindsight, I know it was a bad film, but that didn't stop me from liking it back then. Maybe it was the perfect movie for me in my 15-year-old brain.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
On that note, I actually wrote a review of it for my high school English class. I remember praising the movie's effects and giving it an overall favorable review. I know, no longer have that review, unfortunately, but maybe that's for the better. I'm sure it would make for some cringeworthy reading, and that's the kind of stuff people tend to give us. Man, that fucking Brandon Lee Dick comment. Jesus Christ. but that is the show. If you want more of this week, we should have an episode up on patreon.com/lasertime.
Amazing art. Featuring the Winnebago from Spaceballs and Bane wearing a hat.
Bane wearing a fedora, my favorite image from Batman and Robin. That's from 2 weeks ago, I think. We have a death and birthday quiz. Hang on, we're going to get some plugs out. Lasertimepodcast.com is where you can find this show and many others. Like it, several others. Laser Time is a show that sort of started this, and it is a topic-based show. By the time this comes out, we should have an awesome interview with Trace Ballou from Mystery Science Theater 2000 up, and we did a show about controversial songs that either should be up or coming very soon. But a really fun topic-based show. A lot of clips collected, a lot of research, kind of like this. I think you'd really like it.
Yes.
Talking Simpsons.
Yes, Talking Simpsons is a show that me and Chris do with Bob Mackey. He's the host.
Of
Retronauts fame. And if you like this chronological exploration of things, we go through every episode of The Simpsons from the beginning, just past our 100th episode.
Woo-hoo!
And we have a ton more of exclusives on it, if you like it, on patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Tons of extra stuff there. Check it out. It's how I get to do podcasting full-time again, which includes being on this show.
Yes. And as you mentioned before, there's a Laser Times Patreon, patreon.com/LaserTime, which has the still-to-be-named bonus episode of 302010 where we read your comments and we have extra clips and also Bonus Time, our weekly show where we talk about what we're into in 2017, plus movie commentaries and some other cool
movie
stuff.
Commentaries. And Henry, we just did a show about Spider-Man and his
yes
not only about Homecoming but Spider-Man's long, hard-fought journey to the big screen. It's a weird story.
It is so complicated. Again, another chronological exploration of something.
So in honor of that, Hank and I have a video commentary on Patreon as well for what Spider-Man cartoon?
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
No
sync necessary. We stole it. It's up there. Don't tell Marvel.
Yeah, it is the episode called A Firestar Is Born, which features the X-Men. It is the first animated appearance of Wolverine and Juggernaut all in one thing. It's very funny and bad, but look, it was a 1983 cartoon. Don't have high expectations, but I think we make it fun.
All right, and if you like video games, there is Vigigame Apocalypse, which is a whole show just about the video game stuff, and I'm on Twitter mostly talking classic films at Le Cine Nerd.
Yes. Hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. We'll tell you when shit's available, or just check lasertimepodcast.com. I know no one likes to check websites anymore, but it's always there, and I'll let you know when everything's up. Diana, who died?
2007, Tammy Faye Baker-Messner died.
Aww.
Age 65.
Cried herself to death.
She cried herself to death. Eyes of Tammy Faye is such a great documentary.
Yeah,
I love it.
Her husband is one of the her ex husband is one of the worst human beings ever.
He's
in
a terrible
total.
He literally doesn't
worst.
Deserve to live.
He should be dead. He should have been died in jail, and yet he's still free scamming more people with
selling
Jesus
fucking Bible doomsday kit. Like,
but buckets of oatmeal. And, yeah. But meanwhile, Tammy Faye, I see her as more a victim in all this, and she.
Yep. She earnestly believed in everything that she was saying. She really wants to help people.
Yeah.
And when she met gay people, she's like, oh, I don't hate you.
Yeah, okay. No, it was controversial with the rest of the evangelical crowd that she was like, AIDS is a horrible disease. We have to help these poor people. And people are like, but they're gay.
They're supposed to die.
And she's like, but it's sad. Yeah. And they're people, and we love them.
So R.I.P. Tammy.
R.I.P. Tammy.
And I almost feel like the bigger one, Woolworths.
I can't believe I've been in one.
Died 117 years old.
Wow.
We have to all stay the hell out
of
Woolworths
forever.
Oh, man, I've never been in a Woolworths.
Yeah,
I have.
The original variety store.
All right.
Right.
And now, as always, it is time for the birthday quiz.
Oh, birthday is a doodly-doo.
Can you
I
guess?
Missed the last one. I got to make up for it.
Okay. I feel like these are good ones. All right, so two birthdays, one man, one woman. We'll start with the guy because he's turning 50. Born July 16th, 1967. He was a high school football team kicker. Studied sports broadcasting at USC before joining the Groundlings. Got a couple tiny TV roles, then cast on SNL. Film roles include Bob Woodward, Rick Marshall, Marshall Willenhall.
Will Ferrell!
I
said it first.
We got to check the audacity file.
I don't need it. I'm so ahead.
Nice job, guys. All right.
Will Ferrell was a football player.
Officer Willenhally. That was
Marshall Willenhally.
Yeah,
a fucking Land of the Lost joke.
Yeah, but then he was in the Land of Lost movie.
He was in the Land of the Lost movie.
Rick Marshall. Yeah. Mm. All right. Born July 15, 1946. She has 11 Grammys, a Tony, a Golden Globe, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 8 platinum albums, including Living in the USA, Heart Like a Wheel, Canciones de mi Padre.
Oh,
Linda
Ronstadt?
Linda Ronstadt.
Damn.
Linda Ronstadt. Hell yeah. 2 for 2, baby.
Knew we shouldn't have let you on this show. That has been it. Check 302010.net. And we'll close out with, oh yeah, the Immortal RoboCop theme. We will see you next week, people.